Blog Talk Radio.
New York, Jersey, Philly, D.C., Virginia, Atlanta, everybody rise! I feel some type of way, Sports City, man, but we're in the midst of April right now. The regular season in the NBA is about to end. Welcome to the Crossover Cafe. You got the next 60 or more minutes locked and loaded with Sports City. Y'all could have been anywhere else in the world, but y'all are here with the chefs. I'm feeling some type of way. I got my co-host with me, Arkeezy, a.k.a. Mr. King. Welcome to the cafe. How are you feeling this evening?
I'm feeling good. I'm trying to keep up with the ageless wonder, a.k.a. TP Timeless. So excited to be here, my brother. Let's get this thing cracking.
Well, I'm going to take off this blazer, loosen up the tie. Step inside, the Cafe Timeless is alive. The calling number is 929-477-2759. Get in here, get a plate, toss it around the kitchen as best as possible. But I'm feeling some type of way because of a guy that I grew up watching. I'm not going to lie, I love him to death. But the elephant in the room, or the elephant in the cafe, or the elephant in the kitchen, or hell, the elephant in the NBA, Irvin Magic Johnson resigns, steps down away from his position, president of operations with the Los Angeles Lakers, stunning the basketball world. I mean, if you're not stunned, then maybe you just don't like the Lakers, or maybe you don't feel a certain way about Magic, or I don't know what you're feeling. But to me, I was completely stunned, reason being that he just had this job for 9 months. He hasn't even been there for a full year, and he's leaving on his own will. Like, nobody pushed him out the door. I wanted to throw this one around the cafe, see how you feel about this one, Arkeezy. Your thoughts on Magic departing from the Lakers organization.
Man, Magic ain't going nowhere. He just taking off that title, you know. Like you said, get that monkey off his back, take that coat off, take off that hat, and put back on the Magic hat, you know. Everything that made him Magic Johnson, everything you love about him as an ambassador of the game of basketball, as a lifetime Laker. I mean, Magic Johnson simply did what he thought, what he knows. I correct myself, not what he thought, but what he knows is best for the Lakers organization, what was best for him, and what's best for the franchise moving forward in terms of returning to its winning ways. As Magic Johnson mentioned yesterday during the interview, prior to LeBron James' injury, they were sitting fourth place, just two games out of first place. And prior to the beginning of the regular season, who really ever allowed that thought to cross into their minds when there was so much criticism of, you signed JaVale McGee, you signed Lance Stephenson, you signed Rajon Rondo. Like, this isn't even the blueprint. This isn't even the formula for how you build around LeBron James, how you advance to the finals with LeBron James. You do it with shooters. You got a bunch of ball handlers. You got a bunch of playmakers. And then you got these young guys, and maybe they don't know how to win. But they were beginning to figure all of that out. And they were sitting top five in the Western Conference, not the Eastern Conference, all under Magic Johnson. And then there's the unforeseen injury. Then there's all the little stuff that happened where Magic did learn by trial and error. Some issues with the whole tampering. Magic was just being Magic, as he alluded to last night. Hey, I like to reach out to people, encourage them and support them. Early on, he made a couple of mistakes. He got his hand smacked. Didn't like it, but he made adjustments. Obviously, when Ben Simmons wanted to make contact, Magic followed proper protocol, got that cleared, thing was everything moving forward. Then, obviously, everybody was like, well, Magic Johnson didn't get Anthony Davis. That's not from lack of effort on Magic Johnson's part. That was the guy down in New Orleans, Dale Demps. That's on him. That's why he lost his job. He got fired. Magic Johnson simply resigned because Magic is very astute, ladies and gentlemen, very smart, Timeless. This wasn't some haphazard event, in my opinion. This wasn't some move by a guy who was in over his head. This is a guy who is in management, obviously, with the Los Angeles Dodgers, has a say-so, obviously, with the Los Angeles Sparks, has businesses that have been thriving for years. This is a guy who came out of Michigan State, drafted by the Los Angeles Lakers, and receive what? Shares and stock in the company of the Lakers, and not so much money in contracts. It wasn't about a contract. It was about being a Laker for life and the opportunity to learn business firsthand and be mentored by one Jerry Buss, a very well-respected businessman. So do we really think, do you think, Timeless, because I know I don't think Magic Johnson didn't know what the hell he was saying or doing last night with that AKA impromptu resignation interview. I'd like to hear what you have to say about it all, Douglas.
I'm pretty mixed up about the whole situation, and here's why. And this is why I said I feel some type of way, because I love Magic Johnson. I want to see him a part of the game. And it's tough when you got to, you know, kind of play, you know, the game within the game. We can't really speak on certain issues, and me being a guy that watched Magic Johnson as of growing up, it was like I like to be around older people or elder people, people wiser that have been through more situations, just to soak up the information. And you can't really hear Magic say anything. He's mum, and I know, you know, it's a situation where I know he'd like to speak more. And he even spoke on the fact that I wanted to speak on Russell Westbrook's historic night of him having the 2020 game, and he couldn't say anything, and knowing how, you know, meant much to Russ for Nipsey and things of that nature, and Magic couldn't. So I don't want to make it look like he's, you know, I don't want to say he's tired of, you know, being quieted or hushed, or he gets fined by, you know, tampering or saying anything, things like that. But it's just the circus right now in Los Angeles. I got to call it the circus. The coaching abilities of Luke Walton, he only has that job because of his last name. He only has that job because of his last name. When he won the championship while he was in you know, Los Angeles with the Lakers, it was not because of him. It was because of Kobe Bryant. And when he won, while he helped assist the Golden State Warriors, all he had to do was just manage the situation and make sure that these dudes don't foul out, make sure they're on the floor. And they picked him up with open arms because they're like, we are desperate to have any coach come run the show in Los Angeles. And everybody's basically stating, well, it'd be the end of his run in Los Angeles as the head coach. And they were saying that there's been, you know, speaking of Magic potentially being the one trying to get him out of the door and Genie trying to hang on to him. So I don't know if they do hang on to Luke Walton. If they hang on to him, I hope for significant change in his coaching abilities. I don't want to blame it on the players that are there. I think that they do have a decent amount of players that can make things happen, but I don't know if they can contend in the West and start knocking off, the first five, like the first five teams or the first six teams within the Western Conference. The West is so tough. It's not just going to take LeBron James. And I don't want to pin it all to Anthony Davis coming to the team and making a significant change. It's going to take more than two monsters, superstar players, and LeBron James, or if Anthony Davis does come there. It's going to need more than them players to come make a difference for that organization. And it's tough to see Magic go. But, you know, more than likely we'll probably see him on the social media or a certain venue, whether it's a network that'll pick him up and try to get him to speak or things of that nature. But I wanted to see if he could make the turnaround happen. But the bigger picture that I look at now is, and a lot of people wanted to pin it on LeBron. I'm not pinning it on LeBron, but I want to see life with LeBron now. Like, Magic got LeBron to come to Los Angeles. Now that it didn't pan out in that first year, and LeBron suffered an interesting injury that had him out for more than a couple of weeks, and then Lakers fell. So now it's like this is the second year of his four-year contract coming up. How do things look with the future of the Los Angeles Lakers? So I'll ask you that question, Royce. Your thoughts on, you know, the Lakers with LeBron, and potentially if they hang on to Luke Walton or not?
Well, I mean, you said a lot. And then so with the question of Luke Walton, the decision-making process, it has been a lot to digest. Do they hold on to Luke? I don't know. I've yet to hear anything that he's been fired. Obviously, that was what everyone was expecting. Those things have been alluded to and made reference to all over social media. However, Luke Walton is a good coach. Luke Walton was coaching this team, as I stated earlier, when this team was sitting fourth place in the Western Conference before LeBron sustained a significant injury and cost them basically 18 to 19 games of this current season. That being said, I obviously disagree with you when you say, well, I'm not sure if this team could knock off, you know, the top four teams in the West. They were one of the top four, so somebody was already easy pickings. Like, one of them seats were belonged to the Lakers, if I'm allowed to say it that way. It doesn't have to be Anthony Davis that arrives in L.A. next season. If I'm being really honest right now, Thomas, can I be honest a little bit? Can I be me? Can I kick my feet up a little bit, grab me a cold one, you know, and roll my sleeves up as I dig into this sandwich here? Because here's what I'm really eating on when it comes to what occurred and how this could all play out. Everybody, Thomas, who was happy to see that the Los Angeles Lakers, whether it be LeBron James that people got hate for and didn't want him to get Anthony Davis, or whether it was Magic Johnson that people hating on and don't want this to have success as an NBA GM because he's the so-called first-time GM in the NBA and he's in over his head, doesn't know what he's doing. Elton Brand, first-time GM over in Philadelphia, he pulled off the deal and got Jimmy Butler and Tobias Harris, but I digress. Magic Johnson, been in business forever, and many people go to Magic Johnson to learn how to get their businesses going, especially in the black community. Even one LeBron James did that. Or is it just people who hate the Lakers? It's like, no, Anthony Davis shouldn't be a Laker. It's tampering. They should wait because the Boston Celtics have the best deal. Well, peak game haters. Now that you guys may feel like somehow you successfully kept Anthony Davis from showing up in Los Angeles and are hoping and praying, and most of you have some expectation that he's going to arrive in Boston this summer, congratulations. Clutch Sports has a significant player representing not only the purple and gold, but potentially the green and white in Boston. So the two most storied franchises in the NBA will have to interact and deal with Clutch Sports. So if everybody thinks like, you know, Magic doesn't know what he's doing, Rich Paul and Clutch Sports management don't know what they're doing, I would say think again, because this is chess and not checkers. That being said, you're trying to tell me LeBron James couldn't win with what some writers have mentioned and called out DeMarcus Cousins and Jimmy Butler, like they are some also-ran talents. You mean to tell me you don't think LeBron James, Jimmy Butler, and DeMarcus Cousins couldn't get to the Western Conference Finals or the NBA Finals with that talent, not even having to trade away any of the young talent that they were offering for AD? Jimmy Butler's a player.
I think it would be a lot. I think it would be a lot out west. I think they need depth. They don't just need the at least three out of the five starters to come out there and play ball. They need a bench to come out there and work with. I'm not impressed, and I think we're going to agree to disagree. Even if they were at the fourth spot and at the point in time when LeBron got hurt, that was at the point in time where they were seeded. I don't think they would have hung on to that seed through the duration of the season. The Lakers played some questionable ball throughout the entirety of the season. I'm not buying that.
So you're ignoring the fact. You're ignoring the fact for what you feel and would like to speculate would have occurred. Let's just stick with the facts. What's wrong with the facts? The facts were they were sitting in fourth place with that roster currently constructed, right?
Right. And the Thunder were second place.
So
a lot of
so
the Thunder fell out of second place too.
It happens.
It's a situation where teams are going to win and lose games. The Lakers were not going to destroy the Western Conference. In fact, if LeBron were healthy for the entirety of the season, I don't even feel like they still would
have
been expected to make the playoffs. I said this at the beginning of the season that the Lakers would not make the playoffs. I said this.
That doesn't mean anything.
It means a ton.
We don't have to do that. Is my point. We don't have to say think they would have made the playoffs had he stayed healthy. That's absolutely irrelevant. It's unnecessary to say. Unfortunately, he didn't stay healthy. And the team took a nosedive. But that's any LeBron James team. Name a LeBron James team in the last, I don't know, how long has he been in the league, where he hasn't been responsible for the lion's share of the wins. Everybody pencils in 50-win seasons with LeBron James when he's healthy because that's how good he is. All I was simply trying to say was keep the facts. The facts were they were a fourth-place team. So we're not going to speculate on how they would have nosedived from fourth place to miss the playoff with a healthy LeBron. Let's just accept it for what happened. He got hurt. He missed almost a quarter of his team, rounded up to 20. He missed a significant amount of games. The team bottomed out without his presence, and we are where we are right now. So if we're going to consider the possibilities of next season, let's take it all into factual consideration. How deep were they this year? You're telling
they
me
they weren't deep at
if
all.
If you had
they
okay,
weren't deep.
Here's what I'm saying, sir. Here's what I'm saying. If you got your current roster and there's room, obviously, to sign. For example, not saying that they will, not even saying that these are the guys or suggesting these are the signs, like these are the signs, players that will get them over. I'm just saying for all the haters of the Lakers and LeBron and Magic, forget Kevin Durant, forget Kawhi Leonard, right? Don't even talk Klay Thompson even. Let's just look at they could sign Jimmy Butler, they could sign DeMarcus Cousins, because at one point, just a few years ago, everybody was like wanting to see the Sacramento Los Angeles Laker trade and put DeMarcus in LA. That was something everybody wanted to see at one point. Now, a few years later, and an Achilles injury removed, DeMarcus Cousins has a chance to actually enter the Lakers locker room next season, an NBA champion potentially. Jimmy Butler has the same opportunity with Philadelphia. They could end up in the finals and win the chip. But my point is simply this. Jimmy Butler, DeMarcus Cousins, LeBron James is more than enough to compete adequately in the Western Conference. You don't got to dominate the title. You know, who has – look, the Warriors dominated at 73-9 and didn't win the title. No one cares what your record is. Do you have the talent? You're talking about are they deep enough? You don't have to lose any of your current depth. If you're not that deep, you just got deeper by adding Cousins and Butler because they'll play more minutes. So whoever's a part of that bench rotation is obviously going to be fresher and able to contribute more. So that's just my argument.
I'm going to get away from it soon, but I'm going to just say this. They need depth. The Western Conference is deep. The one thing about it in approaching next season, even this season, I could use this season as an example, LeBron is declining. I'm not saying it as a big dip in his numbers or anything, and he's still putting up gaudy numbers, but you see this injury. We have not seen LeBron miss this much time. I can really say that his body's breaking down. I don't want to say that. I don't want to say he's injury prone, but this is something that's visited right now. And in the opening statement that you came out about, you said that he brought in players like Tyson Chandler and brought in also Rajon Rondo. These aren't players that they're going to get to the pinnacle of the playoffs. I don't even want to say an NBA Finals. And then they got rid of players that could have helped them get to the postseason in Zubac and guys like that. And they had to make do with what they had there. So, I'm not buying the Lakers being that strong. They have to make at least a solid three or four moves before I could just be like, okay, these guys are ready to contend in the West. I still think that there's a lot of work that needs to be done. And what if LeBron gets the top trouble? What if his injury lingers him? This is something that the Lakers have to think about, that they need to have somebody beside LeBron step up. And it's going to be more than just two starters that come there, whether it's Boogie, whether it's Jimmy Butler. If they can get AD to come there, it's going to take a bench. They're going to need a team. It's not going to be the old LeBron in the Eastern Conference dominating the East. This is the West, and the West is won differently. Okay, so I'm going to get away from that because I don't want to hang on to that. I know I got a lot of stuff that I want to jump into, especially with two legends. I don't even want to just say NBA players. I want to respect them in their own rights. One with Dirk Nowitzki and Dwayne Wade, both retiring in the same calendar year. And both of these guys are tied together in their postseason run. You have a situation where Dwayne Wade won his first championship up against the Dallas Mavericks back in 06. And Dirk won his first championship up against the Miami Heat in 2011. So these guys have met each other and got their championships up against each other. So it's kind of fitting that both of these players leave at the same time. It's very interesting. And watching both of them have heartfelt, you know, emotional situations. Dwayne Wade's commercial, I don't know if you've seen it, Budweiser gave him a commercial. And everybody that came to Dwayne Wade and spoke their hearts out toward, you know, the man and the person of Dwayne Wade. And Dirk Nowitzki's game last night in the American Airlines Arena down there in Dallas, almost every great that I could think of was there, from Charles Barkley to Larry Bird to guys that got my heart in Detlef Schrempf and Sean Kemp, the reason why I am a Sonic Thunder fan. They all were there for Dirk Nowitzki. So it's like, all of the stars came out for these guys. So I want to see how you feel about both Dirk and Dwayne Wade, and also one by one, futures of the Mavericks and the Heat with these guys leaving.
Man, where do I begin? Who do I start with? I mean, who came into the league first? Dirk?
Dirk came in first.
I guess I have to start with Dirk, you know, give honor to whom honor is due. Dirk Nowitzki currently will hold and maintain, and if anything should happen to derail and offset the budding career of one Luka Doncic, who is, I am on record in saying on numerous occasions this season, arguably be the best foreign player not named Dirk Nowitzki. Dirk Nowitzki holds that crown. He holds that title. The body of work is now, for the most part, cemented. It's documented. It's verified. 20 years experience. First round pick in 1998, the ninth pick overall. German-born Dirk Nowitzki has simply been a force. Timeless. This is a guy who was dominating the game pretty much after his third season of the league, when he first hit the 21.8 points per game. And from there, he gave us that average or better up until, let's see, the 2013-14 season. He was at 21.7, and then it was in 2014-15 where he dipped back under 20 points per game. So we're talking from, again, 2000, 2001 to 2014, 14 years of 20 points per game average or better. Dirk Nowitzki is a great player, a great seven-footer. And prior to the arrival of Kevin Durant, we never really saw a guy who was basically 7 feet who could shoot like that. That had the touch to make that kind of difference from the perimeter, not through post-ups, not through dunking, not through shot blocking, not even through being a dominant rebounder on the glass. But Dirk was smart. Dirk, though he wasn't the most nimble player, while he still had a decent amount of movement dare I not ever say the word athleticism when I speak of Dirk Nowitzki is my only knock. He wasn't the most athletic guy ever in his career, but Dirk had some very special moves. We all know now that so many people watch and have emulated his one-legged fade to create space, his ability to knock down a three ball, and then we had his year in 2011 when not many people expected it. Dirk simply went out and spoiled LeBron James's, you know, party down in South Beach. And LeBron and D-Wade and Chris Bosh, their first year coming together, trying to, you know, dominate the league as a trio. And it was Dirk Nowitzki. You know, he had help from some guys who weren't what they used to be, but they were experienced. They were NBA veterans. They had pride. You got Sean Marion. You had a younger Tyson Chandler. You had Jason Kidd. Jason Terry, like guys who had at one point on their team been a first, second, no less than a third option, played significant roles. We had obviously a coach of the year candidate numerous times in Rick Carlisle, and Dirk delivered. He delivered an MVP performance for the regular season, and Dirk Nowitzki won an NBA championship. Brings me to Dwayne Wade. I don't know where you begin with D-Wade. I mean, here's a guy who burst on the scene, wasn't really heavily recruited by anyone. Coming out of high school, does his thing in the most significant time when it comes to college basketball. Everyone knows your stock goes up during March Madness. He had an awesome run at Marquette during March Madness. He raised the stock. He becomes the fifth overall pick in 2003. Comes into the league with LeBron James, Carmelo Anthony, and you know what he decided? I'm going to continue to be mentioned in the same breath with these guys. And he set out on a mission. And what D-Wade did was put up 16 points per game his rookie year. And the next season, timeless, he jumped to 24. Then he gives you 27 and 27 and 25 and 30 and 26 and 26, 22, 21, 19, 21.5 in 2014-15. That's when he began to dip. LeBron James was already on the team. D-Wade, another guy who just gives you buckets, gives you rebounds, gives you assists, gives you steals. I think he now is going to retire as the leading shot blocker amongst all shooting guards in the history of the NBA. That was held by Michael Jordan. Now it belongs to Dwayne Wade. This is a guy, 6'4", who laid it all on the line. He gave Miami Heat everything. Those years of Dwayne Wade being that 1 year in Chicago, the half of a season basically in Cleveland, we know what that was about. That wasn't about Dwayne Wade. That wasn't about wanting to leave. That was just about principles of the man. It was about the love and the heart and, you know, some getting some things squared away so we could see eye to eye. And it was about salary cap. That's what some people are going to forget, that it really was about business. It wasn't so much that Pat Riley and Mickey Arison didn't have love for D-Wade and D-Wade didn't have love for them. We're talking about businessmen, all three businessmen. They had to make some business decisions. And briefly, he showed up in a different uniform than what we were used to seeing him in. But all is well now. All is right in the Miami Heat basketball world, because Dwayne Wade is going out in class and in style as the most beloved Miami Heat player ever, and that's how it should be. So all I have for Dirk Nowitzki and Dwayne Wade is a salute, and I thank these men for going out at the right time and not staying around too long. Appreciate it.
I agree with you, especially the way that you ended it, not sticking around too long before it started to look like time is starting to win the battle, i.e., and I hate to use this player's name, but Carmelo Anthony, he won't even have a proper retirement. Like, we are going to basically watch Carmelo not be able to hang his jersey up or do his farewell tour with any team. His last little bit of basketball was this year with the Houston Rockets. So being able to see how these guys both finished their careers, and Dwayne Wade had a 30-point night, Dirk played basically the entire game last night, even caught a two-hand dunk. When do we really see Dirk dunk a ball, especially in the midst of a game? And the farewell speech that he had at the end of the game, and also Dwayne Wade's situation too, epic stuff. Dwayne Wade, me and him being the same age, is something that's very impressive. And watching the entirety of his career from when he was at Marquette to being right now back in Miami, his little run around for the past 2 or 3 years when he was with Chicago and Cleveland, just trying to make something happen, and he went back home the right way and ended his career. So the outlook for me for the Dallas Mavericks, I think the Dallas Mavericks are set up well with Luka Doncic. They also have they had a couple of moves happen and traded some players around, getting rid of Harrison Barnes and also Dennis Smith Jr. and also getting rid of DeAndre Jordan. I definitely think that this is a interesting situation for the Dallas Mavericks to make or break themselves, especially with the addition of Porzingis. But they're in the Western Conference. They do have a tall guard and also a tall – I don't even know how I consider Porzingis, whether I could put him at the 3, 4, or 5, but they could interchange him at each spot. So they have length. They just have to be able to defend and just outscore the other team. I think that the Mavericks can be set up to do well in the Western Conference, but this is all subject. So this can potentially be a make-or-break situation where they don't do well and seed below the 8th seed again next year. But I think they will do well, especially if Carlisle sticks around with the core team, the core players that he has around him at this point in time also. The Miami Heat – Excuse me.
Before you get away from the Dallas Mavericks real quick, can I strike a match as you ran down some of the talent there in Dallas, and you talked about the West. A lot of people been doing a lot of conversations. Obviously, the season's coming to a close, and folks are starting to begin to even maybe leapfrog the draft timeless and discuss the whole where's Kyrie going, where's Kevin Durant going, is already going to really link up in New York. But something hit me the other day when I was at work at FNTSY, and we were talking about where guys could end up, and people were asking me what I thought about Kevin Durant, and it struck a chord, and I realized Kevin Durant really admired Porzingis. I thought the Knicks had a chance to get KD based on the presence of Porzingis. Now with Porzingis being in Dallas, this is the guy KD had, the unicorn. Now they have Luka Doncic. Kevin Durant has seen Porzingis up close and personal prior to the injury. He knows what he brings to the table. Kevin Durant has now seen Luka Doncic up close and personal. He knows what he brings to the table. And if KD should happen to decide to leave Golden State, and I don't know that he will, I don't know that he won't, but I'm starting to strongly consider and factor in this Dallas Maverick team, who, again, I say, has a Coach of the Year candidate every season in Rick Carlisle. They have quality management in Cuban. KD knows the ins and outs now of how to win a championship. He knows how owners have to spend money and acquire talent, have a system, be committed to winning, have won maybe a championship too in the history of the franchise. Timeless, Luka Doncic, Kevin Durant, Kristaps Porzingis could be. I'm just saying.
It'd be interesting to see if he could go down there to Dallas. I don't know what they would have to do to entice him to come there, but it'd be interesting. And just to see both of those big guys, I can't really call them big guys. I could just say the length that they would have with Luka, KD, and Porzingis would be very interesting to consider, especially in the Western Conference. They'll have the height to contend. So that'd be interesting in itself. But going back to the Heat situation, I think that there are some quality players being there with Bam, also with Deion Waiters, also with Richardson, Dragic. It depends on if these guys could, you know, hold on to what they have right now and make a difference in the Eastern Conference, especially if a lot of these players move within the conference as well. I think the Miami Heat will be able to contend for a playoff spot. I don't think that they're championship caliber anymore. I think that that was an interesting run from, let's just say, from 2006 up until, you know, LeBron departed up in, you know, 2014, 2015. I don't think they'll get that magic back unless they get an interesting player within the draft or just something special happens in the state of Florida and they get back on that high horse. And I don't know if Spoelstra will still be there, but I think the Miami Heat will do decently. I was discussing this with somebody I know. The success for the Miami Heat would be based upon the consistency of Hassan Whiteside. He's so streaky. You won't get a consistent Whiteside. And when he's playing well, I think that team feeds off it. And if he can come out and play like that consistently throughout a season and they're winning games, I think that the Heat can be special. But if they continue to get him to play two games well and then comes out and has a 5.8 rebound game and he's probably one of the biggest guys in the paint for that team, it's going to always be a question mark for the Miami Heat. So this is how I look at both teams, you know, in a glass, looking at the Mavericks moving forward without Dirk next season and the Heat without Dwayne Wade as well.
Thomas, I agree. And I think a lot does, you know, hinge on Hassan Whiteside. Enough so that if I had a say, so Thomas, what I would strongly consider, and that is trading Hassan Whiteside. I've thoroughly enjoyed the growth and what I've seen from Bam Adebayo this season, and watching Bam all season long, all I could do was think, man, this guy is reminding me of a young Dwight Howard, the way he gets up, the way he sits on dunks like Shaq and Dwight would do. And this guy defends the paint. I mean, he gives you the shot block and he can rebound. He can handle the ball a little bit. He's getting better. He needs significant minutes. And we know Hassan is not a happy camper when he's having to, you know, split minutes or give minutes away in Bam's direction. So if I'm Pat Riley, I'm sure he's a smarter guy than me. He's already considering what it's going to take to get the pieces there to continue the building and continue to getting back into the postseason play there in Miami. And I wouldn't be surprised, Thomas, if Hassan Whiteside is on the move this offseason.
It'd be interesting because then I'm like, well, who do they go with at the five? I mean, Bam, to me, is a four to me. Like, I wouldn't really look at him as a five to fill the void of Hassan Whiteside. They'd have to try and get a big in the paint, but that'd be interesting. But like I said, I don't want to steal too much of the thunder from what the Heat have going into next season. They do have quality players. I think they can make a difference, but I don't think they're championship caliber unless they get something special to happen or at least another pieces to go alongside, let's just say, Dragic. I really don't want to hang too much on Deion Waiters because Deion Waiters still hasn't shown to me that he could play consistent. Like that was his problem in Cleveland. That was his problem in OKC. And now this is the same situation that's going on in Miami. If they can get Deion Waiters to play consistent. And for the past year or so, he's also been dealing with injuries, too. I don't want to call him injury-prone, but we'll have to wait and see how that all pans out. Okay, so we are at the point of the show where I want to discuss the awards for the season. And we have Defensive Player of the Year, Most Improved Player. We have Coach of the Year, Rookie of the Year, Sixth Man, MVP as well. I feel like I'm missing one, but I'll start.
You have
I'll
most
start
improved.
Off. I have most improved.
You said sixth man. You said coach of the year. You said rookie of the year, defensive player of the year, MVP. That's all I had down. I don't know. Are we missing one? I don't think so.
I feel like it, but let's run. Let's have a run at it. So first and foremost, I'll go with coach of the year, and interesting names that pop up. Royce was on target with one of the guys that I feel like can be there, and Coach Nurse out there in Toronto. I think that he definitely could threaten this situation for the Coach of the Year. I have 1A and 1B. This is how I have it written, but I think 1A to me is Budenholzer, especially the job that he's been able to do with the Milwaukee Bucks, where nobody's seen this coming. Milwaukee definitely could have been a problem in the Eastern Conference. I didn't see them being the best team in the NBA. They are the best team in the NBA. I have to give Budenholzer his credit, but Nurse definitely gets the nod also, especially with the move of DeMar DeRozan and Kawhi Leonard. They're basically ultimately the same player, kind of, but I think Kawhi played way more defense than DeMar would, but I have to give the edge to Budenholzer. Your thoughts on the Coach of the Year?
Well, I'm going to try not to dig into too many other pots as I make this statement, because like you, Coach Budenholzer, sitting at 60-21 with the Milwaukee Bucks is the league's best record, right? And I can see why so many people would automatically vote for Coach Budenholzer. But Thomas, I'm going against the grain. Coach Bud did an outstanding job with the Atlanta Hawks team and won a significant amount of games his first year there with them and that team. So, look, I'm going with the Los Angeles Clippers and Doc Rivers. And the reason why I'm going with the Los Angeles Clippers and Doc Rivers, because if you are not a hoops head, I don't think the casual, the average fan could name a current as its star player or go-to guy. An average fan, not a hoop head, just a casual, average NBA fan. If I said, who's the best player on the Clippers? Their knee-jerk reaction would probably be Chris Paul or Blake Griffin. That's my thought. This Clippers team was built on Pat Beverly, Lou Williams, a rookie named Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, and often injured prior to this season, Danilo Gallinari. He played the most games in the single season than he had probably in the last 4 or 5 seasons. A young guy who was grit and grind and hustle and energy off the bench named Montrezl Harrell. Prior to cutting and waving him, Marcin Gortat coming over from the Washington Wizards. A guy who's been traded multiple times. I'm saying 2, 3, 4 in Tobias Harris. And Doc Rivers simply gave this team an identity. He said, we will play hard. We will compete on every possession. And we will stick to this identity no matter who is on the roster and in a Los Angeles Clipper uniform. And we'll compete on the defensive end. And if we stick to the game plan, if we follow it, we will shock many. And they did. They did. If folks would go out and fact check preseason, regular season predictions on where the Clippers would finish, many had them finishing outside the playoffs and barely over 30 wins. Barely over 30 wins. They have 47 timeless. 47. And if they win tonight, it's 48. That means they almost had a 50-win season without Blake Griffin, without Chris Paul, without DeAndre Jordan, without J.J. Redick, without a Jamal Crawford, without the names that you thought were difference makers with the Clippers when they kept falling flat on their face so many years. And they're going to the playoffs. This is the best coaching job I've seen Doc Rivers do outside of managing all the egos in Boston when they won that title. Doc Rivers is my Coach of the Year.
Very, very interesting pick, and I guess we're going to agree to disagree. I think that there's some quality coaches that have done well, at least. Not even just to look at Nurse, I could look at Malone and the job that he's done in Denver, too. I think Malone has done well with the hand that he was dealt, especially in the Western Conference. I think he's done well also. So I think there's at least three coaches that come to mind that have done more with what they've had in L.A., even though the Clippers have been dealt a crazy hand themselves. But these guys had to dig their way and become a top three team in the Western Conference. Okay, so I'll go from coach to most improved player. I feel like we're going to collide and agree here. I got Siakam. Unless you have somebody different, I think D'Angelo Russell could contest for this also. Your thoughts on most improved player?
It's not D'Angelo Russell, because I don't know anyone who would say that D'Angelo Russell, when drafted into the NBA, wasn't considered an all-star level talented player. All D'Angelo Russell was lacking was some maturity and opportunity. You got to remember, when he was drafted into the league, the Los Angeles Lakers, Kobe Bryant was in his way, basically. You got to slow down, young pup. I'm not finished yet. Then he had to deal with injuries. He made some young mistakes, some youthful errors, opening his mouth. He broke the bro code and traded to Brooklyn. He had to deal with injuries. He had to battle back from that. But under the leadership and the tutelage of Kenny Atkinson and their staff, he gave us, what, an all-star performance this season. He has grown. If there was a most growth award as a basketball player, I would give it to D'Angelo Russell. But when it comes to on the court, most improved, hands down, is Pascal Siakam. Timeless in minutes. He went from 20.7 to 31.8 this season. From points per game, 7.3 last year, he's up to 16.9 this season. His free throw attempts last year was 1.1. He's up to 3.8 this season. And he had zero double-doubles in 2017-2018 to 18 double-doubles this year. Hands down, it's no contest. Pascal Siakam of the Toronto Raptors is the NBA's most improved player.
Okay, so that was pretty much easy. I hit the easy button. It's going to start getting difficult here. Rookie of the year, I think it's between the two of them. It's between Luka or Trey. Who do you have? I'll just throw it out there. I'm going to go with Luka. I feel like he's the fan favorite, even though I do think that Trey Young has definitely made an impact at the end of this season and could have possibly stole this award from Luka. I think that the run that Luka was on at the beginning of the season – and game-winning capability, and when he didn't hit the shot, he ripped his jersey off himself. So I feel like there's a lot of people that are supporting Luka. Your thoughts on who should win the Rookie of the Year?
Well, the first fact is Luka Doncic is not playing in tonight's game for the Dallas Mavericks. Trae Young is going to play, I do believe, for the Atlanta Hawks. Thomas, I was getting everything ready for this conversation. I'm going to give you season totals as of right now today before these games are played in finals. Are you ready for this? Total points, 1,526. Luka Doncic, 1,526. Trae Young. These guys right now at this very moment have the exact same total points on the season. Okay, when it comes to three-pointers made, Luka Doncic, 168 total. Trae Young, 155. Free throws made, Luka Doncic, 346. Trae Young, 333. Rebounds total, 563 for Luka Doncic, 296 for Trae Young. Assists, 429 for Luka Doncic, 642 for Trae Young. Steals, 77 total steals for Luka Doncic, 70 total steals for Trae Young. 25 total blocks for Luka Doncic, 15 for Trae Young. 24 double doubles for Luka Doncic, 29 double doubles for Trae Young. Luka Doncic, 72 total games played. Trae Young, currently 80 games played. If he plays tonight as expected, he'll move to 81. Timeless. There are no losers in this race. The voters could vote for either guy and wouldn't be wrong. So my vote simply is to respect history and respect the culture of the game and keep these guys respectfully tied to one another, much like Jason Kidd and Grant Hill. I have co-rookies of the year, Luka Doncic and Trae Young. There are no losers. Here's why. Luka Doncic, from the very beginning to this point, has been consistent and rolling. His end-of-the-season totals are comparable to Trae Young, though they play obviously separate positions, so it's a norm. It's a normative. Anyone with sense knows that Doncic should have more rebounds than Trae Young, and Trae Young should obviously have 200 to 300 more assists than Luka. But look at these numbers, and he did it in 9 games less. He did it in 72. Yet, if we're being honest, we're not slighting Trae Young, because the reality is we all saw Trae Young get off to such a slow start. He looked lost even, like it was too much. But he rebounded, Timeless. He recovered. He found his way, and he came on like a legitimate Rookie of the Year contender. It's too close to call. You have to award both guys, in my opinion. I salute Luka Doncic and Trae Young for giving us the type of rookie race that should be talked about for years to come.
Okay, that's a very interesting one. We do have a caller in queue calling from the 203-898. Welcome to the cafe. What's your name? What's on your mind tonight?
My name is Jose Ty. How's everything going?
All right, Mr. Horton. How are you?
I'm all right. I was listening to you guys speak about Dirk Nowitzki and Dwayne Wade. You guys are on the Rookie of the Year now.
Right. So I don't know how much you caught, but at least for the Rookie of the Year, who do you like?
Trae Young. Definitely Trae Young for Atlanta Hawks, man. I mean, there's the second half of the season. He was slow in the beginning, but he stepped it up. I believe, listen to me, he is going to be special, but he's just on a wrong squad. You know, Atlanta's not good. They're not competing for anything. I love Trae Young, especially at the second half of the season. My vote was for Trae Young.
Okay, so I like the way that Royce tied this together, though. I like that he went back to 1994 with Jason Kidd and Grant Hill, the way that both of those boys came out, one from Dallas Mavericks. Look, and it's crazy. Dallas Mavericks are back at it again in the Detroit Pistons, even though this is an Atlanta Hawk. But I would like to see it tied up, but I really feel like the fan favorite and, you know, Dallas being one of the bigger venues, even though I can't really call Atlanta a small market, but comparison to Mark Cuban and his personality and Luka Doncic becoming a favorite also, that I really feel like Luka's going to be pushed to the forefront in the situation. I wouldn't be mad. Don't get me wrong. I'm with both of you. I'm with the story that Royce threw out there, and no loser here. And I hear where you're coming from as well, hopefully, with Trae Young being the guy. But I really feel like Luka's done enough to do enough damage, contending in games with James Harden and winning late and coming up with a big shot up against the Rockets also. I feel like this is what's going to push Luka in front of Trae. It took Trae to kind of get his lumps in the Eastern Conference to start filling the league out, and then coming up with the way that he was going to come out and play solid ball.
If I may say one more thing, Ty, one more thing. Atlanta Hawks has absolutely no one on their team. The Mavericks have a similar some sort of pieces that they could work with, and knowing when that Dirt is going out, Porzingis is going to step in. But I think, personally, Trae Young did a lot for who surrounded him. Even though that they are on the West Coast, they're on the West, you know, Dallas, I don't even see them being competitors, not even winning two games out of a series. You know, I don't – but Atlanta – I keep saying Atlanta Falcons. I don't know why. I'm just stuck on them. Trae Young did a lot with having no one around him. Am I right, Ty? Who is more important to their team?
To the average person, they wouldn't know some of the names, but I know a lot of the quality players that they do have in Atlanta. Atlanta has decent players there that have made a difference, especially in the latter part of their season. So, but I understand with, like, the novice basketball person wouldn't know the names that I would mention, but They have had players that came in and made differences up against quality teams and come up with some big wins in this season also. So I understand where you're coming from. I do understand where you're coming from.
You do? Okay. Okay.
Okay, so this is where it's going to start to get thick, people. So the next one is the sixth man of the year, right? And I have it between the – okay, so they have three players listed. I suppose my own guy, you guys already know who my third guy would be, but I'm going to go with the first two, being Lou Williams and Domantas Sabonis. I want to see how you guys feel about it. My third guy was Dennis Schroeder. I don't think he will get the mention for the sixth man award, but – The way that he's been able to play ball coming off that, the way that he's been able to play ball coming off that bench, I really love the way that he plays ball. And not just saying that because he plays Oklahoma City, he has been the mixing spoon, if you will, when Russell starts playing that out of control ball. It's like he kind of, not like he tells Russ to calm down, but he is that quickness that, you know, Russ has to kind of settle down and let him do his thing to be effective in the midst of the game. But I don't think that he's going to be qualified for the sixth man. So I'll keep it to my – from what I've seen from at least the top two, from Domantas and Lou. But Lou has always been one of the mainstays, similar to the way that Jamal Crawford has threatened the sixth man award as well. Royce, I'll come back to you. Your thoughts on the sixth man of the year, who do you have, and also the potential players – that they mentioned before.
Well, Thomas, you said it was going to get thick. And for me, you just hit the easy button again. It's Lou Williams. Same stats as last season. It's a repeat winner. It's a no-brainer. All you got to do is check the player card and see what he did last year when he won Sixth Man of the Year and what he did this year. Again, think about it. No Blake Griffin, no DeAndre Jordan. He did it with Tobias Harris. He did it after Tobias Harris trade. He did it with Gallo. He did it with a rookie. He did it with Pat Beverly. I mean, the guy, he just gives you 20 points. He gets to the line 6-7 times. He's giving you 5-6-7 assists off the bench, getting double-doubles. Same guy from last year, man. Nobody threatened him. Domantas Sabonis. Hey, look, he filled in admirably, but no one knows who Domantas Sabonis is. Again, if you're not a hoop head or a hardcore fan, you don't know the name. There's no wow factor. He didn't dominate headlines at no time during the season, so I don't think it's a contest.
Okay, Jose, do you agree with the Lou Williams assessment, or do you think it's Domantas Sabonis or another player that is, you know –
I'm going to go with you, Ty. Listen, Schroeder, I don't even know why he did not even talk about Schroeder, man. To me, Russell Westbrook is overrated because he just plays loose. He plays too loose at times. He has an all-pro with Paul George right next to him. But think about it. When Schroeder comes off the bench and he runs point guard for OKC, to me, they're a different team. To me, it shouldn't be about – What six man comes off the bench to help the team the most? And Schroeder is that guy. I would pick him over anybody today, right now, because you said it, Ty, but his name might not be popped up into the question. But Schroeder, I was thinking about him for like 3 weeks ago when I was watching him in the game, and Paul George went off, and Russell Westbrook just couldn't make a basket. And Schroeder just came in, hitting him, passing him. He was still playing defense. I like Schroeder. I just don't know why he's not being talked about.
I don't know why either. I don't know if they, you know, entered the fact that he got injured and missed, I think, like a good 3 or 4 games. I don't know if that's why they lost him in the conversation. But I can't take away from what Sabonis has been able to do, especially with Oladipo going out for the remainder of the season and Lou Williams. I mean, this guy should be a starter. It still bothers me. Like personally, this is personal. Like, it still bothers me that Lou Williams is on a freaking bench. Like he plays so significant that he should be starting. But I understand that, you know, coaches use him as the ammunition. Like, they need a lift that come off of the bench and give them points. But the way that he scores at a clip that he needs to be starting. You know what I mean? Like that. That's just me.
I just think it's levels to game planning and strategizing and matchups, and he gives every team an advantage by coming off the bench. and it's what he desired. I mean, let's go back to the OKC days when they did have Harden, and everybody was like, Harden's too good to be coming off the bench. He should be in the starting lineup over Tabo Cephalosha. And no one wanted to accept that James Harden said, no, I should be coming off the bench because that's why we're winning. That gives us the edge. Now, everybody can see James Harden knew what the hell he was talking about. And at the same time, those who said he should be starting, well, they were right too. Now, but he had to do it at the expense of not being next to Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook. And he's historic. Well, we'll get to him.
Okay. Sort of, I hope they sneak in. I doubt they sneak them in, but I'm going to keep on going. So outside of the sixth man, this is where it's going to start getting interesting now. And here again, it's Sports City. I hate to keep setting myself up for this situation, but I kind of have to. Defensive Player of the Year, right? And the name that they mentioned, right? They have Gobert, they have Giannis, and they have Paul George. And, of course, my bias is pulling me to Paul George. And not only just my bias, but the way that Paul George has been playing defense this year, he's been coming up with critical play after critical play and defending a lot of the top players on the other team too. So it's like that's the way I feel about the way Paul George has been playing defense. Now, I can't take away from what Giannis and Gobert do, especially Gobert, because they think that Gobert is the leader for the Defensive Player of the Year. So I'm like, okay, I know Gobert is a presence in the paint for the Utah Jazz, and this has been his mainstay as of last season. Well, he's been there for a while, but for the past two seasons, he's made a name for himself in the paint, but it just doesn't jump out to me the way that it jumped out the way Paul George has been playing ball. And I can't take too much away from Giannis because Giannis actually plays good health defense, and he also comes up with blocks up against his guys. He gets steals here and there too. But to me, I'm favoring Paul George just because of what I've seen raw because I watch these guys every game of the year. Royce, your thoughts on Defensive Player of the Year? Do you agree with what they've mentioned? Gobert being number one, Giannis being two, and Paul George at number three.
Timeless, I'm riding in my boat. This guy is on a team that coming down to the last game, look like they might be backing their way out of the playoffs. He boasts averages of 17.3 points per game, 15.6 rebounds per game, 1.4 assists per game, 1.8 blocks, and 1.7, I believe it is, steals. I give it to you in his totals. Andre Drummond had 418 offensive rebounds, more than Rudy Gobert. 796 defensive rebounds, more than Rudy Gobert. 1,214 total rebounds, more than Rudy Gobert. 134 steals, way more than Rudy Gobert. 138 blocks, we yield to Rudy Gobert. He scored 1,350 points. I believe that is still more than Rudy Gobert. And I will have to fact check where they are in double-doubles. Most, he's sitting on 68 total double-doubles. My Defensive Player of the Year is Andre Drummond.
Very interesting. Very interesting. I didn't even see his name be a part of the discussion, so I want to see if they do put him in the voting. Jose, your thoughts on the Defensive Player of the Year between Gobert, Giannis Antetokounmpo, Paul George, Andre Drummond, if there's another player that I'm missing, Draymond Green, Kawhi Leonard, if you want to answer these
people, I've been hearing Miles Turner.
Yeah, I was thinking about Turner, but you know what? How about this one? How about Embiid from the 76ers? His present, I mean, that team is everything with him, and it could be somewhat without him, but they're everything with him. His presence in the paint, man, forget it. He's the number one guy in the NBA going to the free throw line. I think that I definitely would give it to Embiid, Joel Embiid. He's definitely up there, man. If you don't recognize him as being a person that dominates the paint, doesn't let people come to the hole on him, I'm going with Embiid, man.
Wow, these guys are just throwing big man after big man up. And I know with Royce here and that, he might fall in love with you, man, because he's a Sixer guy. So, Royce, how do you feel about this? How do you feel about that with him throwing a Sixer in the air? Do you agree, disagree? I know they say brotherly love. Your thoughts?
Hey, I respect it. I appreciate you know the love being thrown his way. But I just think defensively, you know, this season, look, I know Embiid and Drummond, they've had head-to-head battles, and Embiid offensively has cooked Drummond. But when it's the Defensive Player of the Year award, and I wanted to look at the stats that I consult with a defensive player. I'm looking at, do we end possessions, right? Can he single-handedly end the possession by going out getting rebounds? Offensive and defensive, right? You can keep it going on your side. Does he get deflections or steals at a high clip? Are you getting, you know, your fair amount of block shots? Because it's a Defensive Player of the Year award. And when you think about big men who won it multiple times, the Dwight Howards, the Ben Wallaces, these guys are three-time winners. You know, look, Andre Drummond doesn't get a lot of conversation, but last year Andre Drummond had 114 steals with 120-plus, 130 block shots. He had over 1,200 total rebounds. Those are the type of numbers that the Rodmans and Dwight Howards and Ben Wallace's were putting up when they won the award. But Drummond is giving you points as well, like the Howard did. And we're not even going to discuss Drummond. We're not going to even mention his name. If his team sucks, his team sucks. But it's the player, the Defensive Player of the Year. So, hey, shout out to Embiid, but I'm sorry. Drummond has got the numbers in all the right categories, in my opinion, that says he's been this season's best defensive player.
Okay, this is going to be very interesting, like I said.
Hey, Ty, can I say one more thing, Ty?
Yes, you can.
Hey, Ty, this is, I was speaking on Miles Turner. He played 68 games, had 55 steals, 187 blocks. Miles Turner has some numbers too, man. You can't count them out.
Royce had just mentioned Miles Turner, so that was one of the names that he did. He was mentioned here, so that was an oversight on your end. But
hey,
like I said,
Ty, Miles Turner has less than 600 total rebounds for a 7-footer. Drummond is lapping by 600. The shot blocks, yes. I love he a SWAT dog. I think he's the season's total leader on block shots. That's why he gets mentioned. But he doesn't rebound. Like, you can't have nights when you're the biggest guy on the floor and you walk off the court with only 3 rebounds. He's done that too many times. Too many times.
Hey, I'm not mad at it. I'm not mad at it at all. Like I said, to me, like the way that I'm looking at it, I still give the edge to PG, especially the way that he's been able to play D, especially without, this is the icing on the cake for me, without Andre Roberson, even though a lot of people try to, and I'm not hung up on Andre Roberson, believe me. A lot of people say that he's the lockdown defender. I don't see it. But from what he's been able to do without Andre Roberson being there and them still being a top quality defensive team in the NBA, I like what PG's done at the Defensive Player of the Year position. Okay, so I think it comes down to two. At first, it was PG was in there, so now I think PG's excused himself out of this conversation, falling asleep, I want to say, in the month of March, because in the month of February, that's when he went on his tear. But in the month of March, he fell asleep. So it's between two, between James Harden and Giannis Antetokounmpo. I want to see how you guys feel about the 2018-2019 MVP this season. Jose, I'll come to you first. I'll let you set this one off, and then I'll go around the kitchen.
Man, I'm going to tell you something. To me, this is one of the closest MVP battles just because of what the Greek Freak's done. He got the best record in the NBA. James Harden, man, he was shooting 40, like 5 or 6, 7, 8 games in a row. I'm going to give the edge to James Harden. I personally, I don't like Harden. I don't like James Harden just because he chokes in the playoffs. If he could do what he does in a regular season in the playoffs, then he's a monster. But I was listening to Stephen A. talk, and Stephen A. was talking. He was saying that if you could put Houston in the playoffs with a Harden that plays the regular season, they would win the NBA championship. And I would 100% agree with that. That's the Greek freak. I don't even know how to explain this guy. He showed up 4 or 5 years ago, and he just hasn't left. I'm going to give the edge to Houston and James Harden. He's averaging like 36 points a game. Am I right?
I have to pull up his totals. I know he's leading the league in scoring. I don't know do you have his numbers for the season being Jimmy Beard?
Give me a second. I'm working on it now. I had it pulled up.
I was scrambling for it.
I think it's about right. I think that's very close.
36, right?
36. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's been phenomenal.
He has, he's a choker.
Historic. I mean, 30. He is averaging 36.1 points per game, 6.6
wow.
rebounds per game, 7.5. assists per game, shooting 44% from the field, 37 from three, 88 from the line. I mean, just flat out historic. I mean, the dude has put up 50 plus points, 60 points. The weapon of all weapons. If you're talking about go get me a bucket, some kind of way. He can get you a bucket. He'll get to the line. He's got it at all levels, at the rack, the mid-range, the distance, long ball. Nobody cooks like Harden. And unfortunately, as you kind of, you know, spoke there, Jose, man, it's a number of people who just don't like James Harden. But if I could wave my hand, right, and ask you to take whether they like or dislike the guy out the equation, and just respect the numbers, this dude is great. And he's been playing MVP level since he arrived in Houston. And so he does have one. I think he should have two, maybe three. Yet I'm going to follow all that up by saying I think that this year's league MVP is Giannis Antetokounmpo. And I know that flies, again, in the face of everything that I just said. It flies in the face that he's done something historic. I mean, he's the first player, basically, I think since, like, Wilt Chamberlain. You know, it's been a long, long time since somebody scored, like, 27. Now he's up to 2,800 points. He's over 500 rebounds. He's over 500 assists. I mean, like, his season total numbers are stupid. And, like, if you play fantasy basketball and you own James Harden from the start to the finish of the season and you didn't win your league, you just didn't construct your team well. You just figured I got Harden and that's it. You know, that makes you an idiot. But anyway, I digress. James Harden has been great numbers-wise. And my case, my hope is that because of his performance, the NBA creates a best offensive player of the year award. Like, we have a defensive player of the year award. I think we should have an offensive player of the year award. And the MVP should go to the criteria that they use most often when they make their determinations, as opposed to the years when they slightly deviate. When the Thunder weren't that good, but Russell Westbrook had a triple-double and did something historic, they gave him the award. His team was not the best team in the league. He did not have the overall number one record in the league. That was moving away from the norm, and others who they followed suit. And now a lot of people are clamoring, like, do the same for James. And I'm saying, no, don't do it, because James has won. But Giannis Antetokounmpo may never get this same opportunity ever again. I'm not saying something's going to happen to him. I'm saying the reality is, how many times do we think the Milwaukee Bucks are going to come back with the overall best record in the league? They have that right now. Coach Bud could be Coach of the Year right now. Giannis is at 27 points, like 13 rebounds, 12.5 to be exact, 27.7. So if we round up, you're talking 28 points, 13 rebounds, 6 assists, 2 blocks, 1.5 steals, 58% shooting from the field, a respectable 73% from the free throw line, and he's doing all that in 33 minutes. And he's had some huge monster games himself where he goes for 35, 40, 45 points, 20s and 30 points and 20 rebounds. I mean, he's had a great season. But I also want to add, what has he done over the body of his career? While James was playing at an MVP level for the last 5 seasons, Giannis has been transforming his body from a skinny little Greek freak to a beast of a Greek freak that is bumping guys off their spot, like moving Clint Capella, moving Embiid, moving Andre Drummond, moving Aaron Gordon, guys that you would say, man, they should be stronger than him, if not as strong, and he'd give them a bump and then dunk on them with disrespect and scream. Giannis, man, that's my vote. I'm sorry. I salute James. You got one. Let somebody else get one. It's Giannis Antetokounmpo.
I am not mad at that at all. And there was a dunk on – he dunked on somebody really bad the other day. I forget who it was, but he's been doing that to everybody. Like, I can't – I feel bad with people. As soon as he puts his back on their body, like, as soon as he does that and he's near the paint, I feel sorry for whoever it is, including Blake Griffin. He even made Blake look bad. Like, he made Blake Griffin look bad down there. So it's like, if he's down there, just let him go. Like, well, pick up the foul. Like foul him. That's the best option. Just foul him and make him earn that the line. Because if he's near the paint, he's long enough to just reach for the rim and just dunk on you. Or if he's close enough, he's going to make you look real bad down there. Here is where I'm going to weigh this, and it's going to be quick, short, and simple. Just picture both teams without the individual. That's how I look at it. Picture the Rockets without James Harden, and picture the Bucks without Giannis Antetokounmpo. And not to say that the Rockets would not fall off, and I feel like they would lose more games. Don't get me wrong, but I still feel like they have a decent core. I think D'Antoni knows what to do with that offense. They've done well. If Budenholzer were to coach this Bucks team without Giannis Antetokounmpo, they would not be the best team in the NBA. They probably won more games as of last year, but they would not be where they are right now. They are the best, with two E's, forget one, the best team in the NBA right now. And I think it is because of number 34 and what Giannis has been able to do. Even though it's in the Eastern Conference, the people that I know will be talking about, well, he doesn't play in the West, tell him to bring it to the West. He doesn't make up where his team is suited in the conference. But he's been able to do this and get a 60-win season. I can't even think of the last time the Milwaukee Bucks had a 60-win season, if ever. If ever.
I'm right there. I don't know if ever. I mean, maybe Luau Cinder and Oscar Robertson.
But they didn't have that many teams. They didn't have that many teams then, though. Right. They didn't have that many teams, though, Roy. So, it's stunning that what he's been able to do and keep these guys afloat to contend with the Boston Celtics, to contend with the Toronto Raptors, to contend with your Philadelphia 76ers, and still be able to win these games and get outright home court advantage throughout the playoffs if they continue to win, knowing that they have that advantage up there in Wisconsin. Nobody's going to really want to go up there and play ball. So I'm going with Giannis. I'm going with Giannis, and I feel bad because Harden had to carry that load all throughout the month of December while Chris Paul was out for week upon week upon week, and Harden was scoring 30-point game after 30-point. He had, a total of 32 games or more of scoring over 30 points. Like, Harden went on a complete tear right there, and it's like he has been carrying this Rockets team up until this point. But, again, I just look at if you were to remove both of these players, if this was a Game 7 and the Rockets were playing the Bucks, and the only way that would go down is if it's in the finals. But I'm just trying to set up a scenario. And both of these guys got fouled out. Who do you think would win? I'm giving the edge to the Houston Rockets.
Rockets.
The Milwaukee Bucks. Exactly. You're helping me. Thank you. If Giannis was fouled out and James Harden was fouled out, I think the Rockets would win that game. Milwaukee would suffer without their most valuable player. I'm going with Giannis. Okay, so we have a little over 10 minutes left in the show. I wanted to, like, touch base on a certain situation, and I heard Jose jump into it, and he said that Russell was overrated, right? Now, this has been coming up on different network after network, and it's speaking on, you know, him being overrated, and the NBA players voted on it as well, and him and Draymond tied at being overrated. I want to see how you got, or just, I don't know if Royce feels the same way, but I want to see how you feel about him being overrated, and I want to eat. I'm going to come back and eat, so I just want to see how you guys feel about it, of him being claimed as being overrated. But Jose, I'll let you start on it first because you brought that topic up and it helped me cook this one up.
All right, Ty, listen to me. The other day I was thinking about Westbrook and how, to me, the triple-double changed the game. But to me, it's easy to get a triple-double if you really, 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 really think about it. He only has to make a couple baskets for 10 points. That's the, you know, you get what I'm saying, Ty? He would only have to focus on rebounds and rebounds and assists, and then that's it. That's
Please
it.
Cook.
The points are just going to come to you.
Please cook. Please cook. I need more than hot dogs, and I'm gonna scarf that. I need you to cook. I need a buffet.
Yeah.
You're going to have to give me more food than that. I need a lot.
Oh, okay. Okay, how many games have you seen Russell Westbrook just did absolutely nothing? I mean, he's going to get a triple-double, a quiet triple-double, but he takes 20, 30 shots, and he doesn't look like he's an MVP kind of player. And I don't get it. I don't get it. Because he's strong, he's fast, he's dominant, he can't shoot, you know? He's overrated, man. I guarantee you this man is overrated. He has Paul George on his side, and he can't do nothing. I would be surprised if they win one playoff series because Westbrook's overrated. He shoots too much. He has emotional issues. If you notice, he has he always argues with players. He argues with refs. He bumps players when he's not getting his way. To me, he's fighting with fans. His fans, you know. To me, he's overrated. You go ahead, go, Ty. I want to hear you cook on this one. You tell me why he's not overrated.
You're cooking right now. You're cooking, and all you gave me was oodles and noodles, hot dogs, and SpaghettiOs. Royce, do you agree with him? If so, then I guess I'll have a big plate in front of me. If you're agreeing with him, also, do you agree or disagree on the stance that a lot of people, I won't just say a lot, but people have stated that him being alongside Draymond Green being the most overrated players in the NBA.
Russell Westbrook is just not liked. Let's just keep it real. It's the
Bingo.
Same as James Harden. It's the same. Some people just can't handle what it takes to be a professional athlete because they're not a professional athlete. They didn't make it. They didn't realize all what would be required of them to have to manage all the expectations on a daily basis, the hate, the competition, and opponents gunning for you. To be a professional athlete, you got to eat right, you got to sleep, you got to do interviews that you don't necessarily want to do. You got to answer questions you don't necessarily want to answer. And you got to do it multiple times a day starting in September all the way through June if you make it to a finals. If not, at least to April. If you get into the first round of the playoffs, you're talking about May, right? First, second round, you're still going into May. Then you got off season. Then when people see you out because it's not football. You don't got no helmet on, so people get to know your face. Every fan base knows the opposing team's best player's face and name. And so people do a lot of provoking, and they become fanatical. And they speak certain ways about players who are what? Great. Everybody hates on greatness. People who don't appreciate greatness, the only other alternative is to hate on greatness. But if Russell Westbrook played for anybody's favorite team, they love him. They defend.
Could I ask you a question? If OKC needed one shot to win the game, who are you giving the ball to? Paul George, right?
To do with whether you overrated or not.
Because
we're not talking about coaching decisions. We're not talking about shot selection. I'm just making a factual statement that people just don't like Russell Westbrook. So they're saying he's overrated. Well, let me see. You go out there and get 800 rebounds. Let me see you dish out over 100 assists while going out getting over 140 steals while scoring over 2,000 points. Or, oh, excuse me, score over 1,800 points. Let me see you do it. Let me see you make over 100 threes in a season.
I would if I take 600 threes.
You would?
If I took 600 of them, I would.
Prove it. Prove it. Prove it. And check your facts. He hasn't taken that many. When he took close to 603 attempts, he made 200 of them.
No, I was being a little more sarcastic when I said 600.
I'm just being sarcastic equally as well. That's my point. He never took that many. I'm just saying, if we going to cook on something, let's just cook on it. But if we just hating for the sake of, well, I just don't like the guy, well, let's just be honest and say, well, I just don't like him and leave it there. Like,
exactly.
Let's leave me out the discussion. He's not overrated.
Yeah.
He's underrated. He's underappreciated. Like, again, my point simply was too many fans cannot identify, recognize, and then respect the varying degrees of greatness. I just said Giannis should win MVP. That doesn't affect James Harden performing at an MVP level. It doesn't change any of his numbers. And it doesn't mean that I can't appreciate the fact that James Harden is great, period, and has been that way for the last 5 years since he's been a Houston Rocket. LeBron James is great. Steph Curry is great. Kevin Durant is great. And they're all great differently. Paul George, he has had his best body of work this season. Prior to this season, and I was in Indiana watching the Pacers prior to this season, and I watched Paul George come out the gate every year since he became a starter and was the franchise player for that team and look like an MVP November through December. And then after that, everything declined. It was this season that Paul George played well in November. And then in December and January, he took off and looked like an MVP candidate. But guess what happened? The old decline after the All-Star break. And we talking like somehow he making Russell's career? Man, I'm saying you got to get the sleep out your eyes, get the bias out your eyes, and recognize greatness. Paul George gets to do what he does right now in OKC because of Russell Westbrook, not because he's doing Russ a favor. Russ doing him a favor. Russ, Batman, he taking all the hits. He taking all the criticism, taking all the hate and all that venom that everybody is spewing his way. Meanwhile, PG, he get to be, you know, fancy free and fly and just stroke the ball. That's easy work, bro. That's easy work. Russell Westbrook, underrated. All day, every day. He a dog. People don't like dogs because they bark and bite.
Oh, okay. So I don't know if I get to eat because Roy just took the damn plate. like I feel like I feel like that dog that watched, I feel like that dog that got the steak bone and it get ready to bite it and the other dog just came and just took it. It's like, damn. Like, it's like before. Well, I don't get to bite the damn bone, you know what I'm saying? So the fact of the matter is this, and I kind of like want to use the same motto that Royce was using, but I don't want to throw you in it because you're not an NBA player. I can't just say, hopefully go into the league and get a triple-double because if you ain't got a triple-double in the league, I'll be your manager. I'll be like, okay, well, they're great. Well, I'm managing, yeah, I'm going to be the new Drew Rosenhouse Yoga. We're going to run and ride out like that. But here's how I look at it. Okay, so we all look at it like this. Okay, the last person to do it was Oscar Robertson. They get a triple-double in the season. Okay, right? And Russ did it 3 years ago. They did it last year, and he did it this year, right? So you say he has games where he scored, all he had to do was score the ball five times. He had about, I want to say, and I'll be fair with the number. I say Russ had about seven games where he had like that 10-point game. But not even like he had 10. He probably had like a 14 or 19-point game. Because Russ is going to give you, his average is like 20. It's over 20. It's like 21, I think. But it's going to get you 20 points. So it's not like he's cheating you. It ain't like he just laid the ball up five times. You know, he don't lay the ball up. Russ will go dunk on your big man. So that's one. Two, what point guard you know in the history to get you 10 rebounds? Like and here people say, oh, he gets the bullshit rebounds at the free throw line. Okay, he gets about four or five of those. What point guard do you know wants to go down there and be with the trees, right? And then when he's with the trees, he go ahead and go jump for jump with these guys. Like, we leap at the same time, and he's out jumping 6'11", seven-footers for the ball. And you know my nickname for him is Meep Meep. So as soon as he gets the ball, he's gone. So if he's getting the ball and he's already out there and it's a two-on-one, your defense is in trouble. For him to be claimed as overrated, and this guy has continually gotten them to the playoffs with this triple-double facet going on the past three seasons while Kevin Durant just left and trying to fill out Paul George and Carmelo last year, where Carmelo wasn't playing defense last year, still averaged a triple-double last year, turned right back around this year while Carmelo Anthony left because he was not the NBA player that everybody thought he would be, and he still averaged a triple-double this year. And outside of Paul George on that team, and yes, I do respect Steven Adams, I do respect him as a big man, but who else outside of Paul George is scoring the ball at an amazing clip for the Oklahoma City Thunder the past three seasons? Outside of Paul George. Cricket soup. That's what I'm talking about. I'm not looking at Terrence Ferguson. I'm not looking at Andre Roberson. I'm not – Jeremy Grant just stepped this game up this season, even though I love Jeremy Grant, but he just stepped this game up this season. Like, come on, you got to be fair with him getting his 10 assists. These guys have to hit shots. It's not like he just throws 10 alley-oops at the rim and these dudes are dunking the ball left and right. Like, come on, you got to be real here. And just like Roy said, it's a fact of people not liking him because – the same players that are in the league, if Russ was playing on the Miami Heat, and if he was playing on the Indiana Pacers, if he was playing on the Memphis Grizzlies, playing on Phoenix, they would love to have him on their team because of what he was able to do. Let alone, he would probably be the guy on those select teams right now. And the fact that Russ had to look at the situation is like, look, I got to help Paul George get his shot to fall for us to be, you know, successful. We got to be productive outside of me. I can't do this alone. I can't do this. And the people that continue to point their fingers at Russ and feel a certain way about him, those are the people that don't like him. But when he does good, they don't have anything to say about him. But when he does bad, they'd be the first ones to point their fingers. And I'm going to say his name because I don't like to say his name or talk about other networks, but Colin Cowherd, this butt is for you. He is the same one. As soon as Russell does good, he overlooks it. He won't talk about it, but as soon as Russ messes up in the game, he'd be the one that spends about 20 minutes trying to rip Russell Westbrook apart. If it's that easy, just like Roy said, well, why don't you go do it? Why doesn't LeBron James go do it? LeBron James is 6'8", 270, and is a willing passer, is a willing rebounder, and can get you 10 points. Why has LeBron James not averaged a triple-double yet in his career? Why has Magic Johnson not done that in his career? Why has Jason Kidd not done that in his career? Why has Grant Hill not done that in his career? There are player after player. Why has Michael Jordan not done that in his career? A lot of players that you can put in this scenario that have not had triple-double season. None of them. And he did it 3 years in a row, and you got the nerve to sit here and agree with what you hear to call him overrated? You must be outside your mind. Well, give me my bone back. Okay, listen, we are at the end of the show.
Take it. I'm sorry. I apologize. No disrespect, man. I didn't mean to take it.
I love steak. You can't do that to me. I'm a big boy. I love steak. You can't do that. Don't let him cook up and then to steal all of my food. Leave me something on the plate. Okay. So I'm glad that we got Jose back here. Jose, I need a plug, close out, shout out, anything that you like to promote as we shut it down at the castle.
I'm not going to give no shout outs today, but I'm going to save that for football season. I just want to thank everybody for the time and just go Toronto Raptors to win the whole NBA championship.
Wow, the Raptors.
Go for the Raptors.
Wow.
That's right, Canada.
He used to be a Knicks fan. See what happens in New York? See these people talking about at least the Knicks left and right, man. Now they want to be Raptors fans, man. This man. Okay.
Wait.
Escape from New York.
LeBron James was in Toronto's way, and now he's not.
LeBron James used to tear
them apart. Toronto. Now there's no more LeBron James. So this is only their East title to lose. You know, they fired their coach for what reason? And brought somebody else. I thought that was a mistake. But they still got the second best record in the East, and I believe that they're going to win the whole East. And I believe they should win the whole thing because they played Golden State well in the games they played them. I like Toronto. I don't know. I'm hooked on Toronto this year.
Only thing I can see about Toronto in that matchup is that Kawhi can DKD well. If he can stay healthy,
correct.
Just like it happened 2 years ago when Kawhi rolled his ankle and that whole series flipped over. So I don't know if Toronto has to get out the East. I think the East is completely up for grabs between at least the top five, between Boston, Philly, Toronto, Milwaukee. Am I missing one? I think it's five, and I'm missing one. Hold on. Milwaukee, Toronto, Philly, Boston. I couldn't say the Pacers, so it wouldn't be the Pacers. But okay, so it's the top four. I think it's at least the top four that I could say can contend for a championship. That is up for grabs. So we will see. Okay, Royce, you already know what to do. Shut this thing down. Anything that you'd like to promote or shout out here at the cafe?
Real quickly, man, just want to invite all the listeners of Sports City. Show your love and support. Join me over on Twitch TV. That's twitch.tv/NBA. It is the official. When I say official, I mean like NBA.com official. It is the official NBA channel. Join me. I'll be co-hosting the NBA Fantasy Hour along with Greg Sussman and Frank Stample. Man, look, it goes down every Thursday, tomorrow, 5 to 6. Check out the NBA Fantasy Feud on the NBA Fantasy Hour. I got to knock this dude, Frank Stample, off because it is a NBA gift card for the NBA store on the line, right? It's like nonstop, like shop till you drop gift card type thing. You feel me? So your boy trying to win that. And then follow me on Twitter, Instagram. Follow me on Twitter, @RoyceKing. If you follow me on Instagram, it's @_RoyceKing_. Thank you to my brother, CP Timeless, for doing what he does right here inside Sports City, man, always holding it down on the Crossover Cafe Master Chef Edition. We a day early, but we never a dollar short. Let's go!
I feel some type of way, man. I'm staring at the world through my rear view. Hope these babies scream to God he can help you with your problems. These dudes wow when I come through. They can relate to these dishes, help you with your problems. Turn us up. What's your problem? There's no way they're going to come in this kitchen and tell me Russ is overrated. There's no way that I'm not going to feel like I'm in my zone. And basketball is my favorite sport. I like the way they dribble up and down the court. Man, I got all of these songs in my mind. I feel like I'm in my basketball frenzy because, you know, the tournament just ended and Virginia brought it back home down to Virginia, even though I ain't nowhere near ACC guy, nowhere near Virginia guy. But at least it's like title time for people to start proving themselves and making a name for themselves. And the sweepstakes for Zion begins at the end of this season, so we'll see where he ends up landing. I'm going to bring that to the next cafe. I feel good that I got my brothers back here in the kitchen. And, oh, yes, I'm back in here eating and cooking. And I got to eat at the end of the show. On that note, tell a friend to tell a friend that it's the chefs again. And if they don't know, now they know.
shit properly and hit you real hard. Then we affect with hard shit that sounds so beautiful.
Right now.
And find a better time or suitable to send out a signal around all my niggas recruitable. Type of niggas to torture your ass, stick them shit in your cuticle. Wait a minute, let me talk to all my niggas at hand. I'ma hit all of my niggas, y'all just follow the plan. Just get money and capitalize and hold on your stack. Fuck the spouses, we keep it moving, ain't no looking back. A lot of lost motherfuckers stuck on what they gon' be. That ain't gon' be me, gotta get it before the year 2G. So all my niggas better do your thing and get yours quick. Quit own land, the whole shebang, nigga, fuck the bullshit. I meant this ever relentless for dropping these bombs. Getting paper, securing shit for my seed and my mom. For my physical and my entire flip mode squad. My old dad has fertilized my mom. Peace to the God. Hold it down for live niggas in the name of hip hop. Offered another path for niggas that made the struggling stop. Fuck that, I'm here to fight for mine and that for your ass. If you was a government, try to do away with my cash. One of the most extraordinary that comes from a place where your man just stab you in the back and smile on your face. Take all them type of niggas off the face of the earth. And do away with all them niggas before I get to them first. So slow it, niggas gon' get it and run right through it. Give witness to all of my niggas who know how to do it. Survival of the most fit for real niggas, no doubt. Get what's yours from out this fucker for your time run out. Get what's yours from out this fucker for your time run out.
Sports City, that's all I got. I'm gone.